Now, needless to say, you cannot mention bees on this programme without a flood of emails and text messages. We'll do our best to get to some of the emails before the end of the programme. We'll dedicate some time because I know a lot of you are concerned. As always, you mention bees, people get worried about swarms and all that kind of stuff. But anyway, let me take you back to June of this year. On this very programme, we heard from the County Veterinary Officer at Galway County Council, Rita Gately, who came onto the programme to tell us the extraordinary survival story of Leona the loggerhead turtle. Now, the loggerhead was washed up in County Clare in November 2013 and was so distressed she didn't eat for 3 weeks. She was cold because she was used to warmer waters of 25 degrees, and at only 13 kilos she was very much underweight. So Rita and the good people at the Galway Atlanta Aquaria took such good care of Leona that she is ready for release. Rowan Byrne, who's a marine biologist and a regular contributor to the Mooney Show, took part in the conversation. Now, I wasn't here at the time. Olin was sitting in for me. He was presenting that day, and they were talking about tagging the turtle and what to do next.
Is she from the Caribbean? Is she from the Mediterranean? Will she head back towards the Caribbean? Will she stay in the Mediterranean? And over the longer term, some of these SRDLs, the satellite delay relay loggers, can actually tell so much information: the depth, the dive, the temperature. They even have the little switch on them with the colour codes that you can log onto your computer and say, she's on the surface for 20 minutes. You can do all sorts. But yeah, satellite tags are the way to go, in my opinion.
But to do all of this, we'd probably be talking about a couple of thousand euros, would we?
Well, a satellite tag, depending on what you want to do and how long you want to last, maybe 1,500, 2,000 euro.
I'm going to have to leave it there, unfortunately, with Rowan Byrne and with Rita Gately. But we are putting the word out there. Contact the show if you're interested in getting your name out there and sponsoring the reintroduction of Leona back to her original. Well, we don't know whether it's her original, but certainly a suitable location.
Well, not surprisingly, after that broadcast, we did get contact from a sponsor interested in getting on board this extraordinary story. Kieran Kelly is a man from Donnycarney, lives in London, and is CEO of Celestial Green Ventures. And he's sitting with us now. Welcome to the programme, Kieran. What is Celestial Green Ventures, and when did it come about?
We do conservation projects in the Amazon Basin in Brazil. The company was formed here in Dublin in 2009. Mm-hmm. So at present, we cover about 1.3 million hectares of at-risk forest in the Amazon. As other parts of it, like I said, we work with NGOs. We have our bases in Brazil, but the heart of the company is here in Dublin.
We've
been doing
a
lot of the research. Well, it's probably actually just me now as CEO of the company, the original shareholder. We have a staff of 17 here in Dublin. We have a staff of 3 in the Amazon, and of course we work with selected and different NGOs, charities that are already on the ground down there. So it's a combination of municipality in Brazil, science and technicals here in Dublin, and practical advice and help from the project area. I mean, it's a huge undertaking, Derek. We've got 10,700 people living in the project area. And I think, as I understand it, 1.3 million hectares is the size of the Bahamas. So, it's a huge project.
So how come a guy from Donnycarney, who lives in London, is CEO of a company based here in Dublin, your head office is here in Dublin,
sure,
is conserving the Amazon rainforest? So where are you getting the money? Who's giving it to you? Are the Irish government contributing money to you?
No,
individuals?
We're just a purely
are you a
private
charity?
Company. No, purely private company.
What are you doing
company.
Exactly?
Yeah, well, I've asked him that.
Well,
What we actually do is... our main focus is on avoided deforestation. So under avoided deforestation, you've got different standards that if you abide by these standards, you can generate carbon offsets through the process. It's a very long process. You then go to the market with the process and with the offsets, generate the income, which keeps the process going and keeps the project going.
And it would be a little bit confusing for people to follow. Explain what a carbon offset is, first of all.
It's an emission reduction. It's you know, we all emit carbon, companies, individuals. What we try to do is, as a group, because we develop our own projects, we encourage companies to reduce internally as much as they can, and then decide what percentage, if any, of their outside emissions, their carbon emissions, they would like to offset or balance.
Yeah, now explain it though. I mean, that's what you do.
Is this buying our way out of being able to emit as much crap
into the air as we possibly want? Give a few quid here for a project here and then we're all clean?
No, I don't think so. I think we all emit carbon. We all emit carbon. This show emits carbon. I emit it. You emit it. You know, we we never encourage a company or an individual to just say, look here, I'll sign a check and everything's wonderful. You know, that has to be a process where companies, we do it. We actually carbon footprint our own company annually. And we look and see how can we reduce internally. But we're still left with carbon that we emit. Mm-hmm. So for us, we have to take responsibility for it, and we do. Now, that can be all of your carbon. It can be a small amount of the carbon. It could be RTE as a whole or this one show. You know, we just encourage people to become part of the process. You know, there is no... I suppose you could say a company could write a check, but are they really green? I think people have gone beyond that. People understand that it's not just about the old traditional methods of greenwashing. I think people are looking at a carbon as an issue throughout their company. Carbon has a cost. Mm. Has a cost every company.
But do I have to pay it?
No.
If I emit carbon, if
absolutely
I have carbon emission?
No, there's very few companies in the mandatory. I think it's just taking responsibility like we do for lots of things.
But and where does the money go if I do you come knocking
back
on my
into
doors?
The project area?
But who licenses you?
We work to a standard. We work to an internationally recognised standard. We're audited. We go through a process that takes 3 years, where the project itself is validated and verified and make sure it abides by a methodology. Mm-hmm. So it's a very long process. There's no issue of just, you know, somebody believe this is a certificate that because you look after a forest, you're given. You know, it's a very long, difficult process because you have to prove the only credits that are issued in forestry are from avoided emissions. So you have to prove that without the project, these emissions would have taken place. And they're the only credits that you're entitled to.
Yeah, but if I don't have to do it, why would I bother? That's what I don't understand. And who audits you?
International standards, the same as anything, the same as any international standard. You would have an auditing process. As a company, we're financially audited. As a project, we're audited in this case by Environmental Services Inc. They're probably one of the big recognised auditors internationally. So they look at the project, they make sure that you're abiding by every facet of it, the methodology that you have to work to before they'll sign off on it, and only after that process will the credits be issued. So it's what we're saying is, in effect, we've stopped these emissions. You know, without the project, without everything being in place, without the people in the project area protecting this area, that these emissions would have taken place. And we've got to prove that scientifically. Mm. It has nothing to do with how much forest you have. People are under the illusion that just because there's a forest there and it absorbs carbon, somehow you're given carbon credits. That's not the case. It's actually, you have to prove that the emissions would have happened without the project being there and in place.
Water charges are coming in next year.
Sure.
And because we all know water is a very scarce commodity and the government needs taxes. So we're all going to be paying water charges. Mm-hmm. Now, the government is telling me I must pay for my water usage.
Sure.
And that's fair enough because I'm giving it to the government. But in your case, you come knocking on my door and I'm giving money to a private company.
Did you not think it was a good idea to reduce your water usage anyway? It's not an infinite resource.
I think it's a fantastic idea.
Mm-hmm. So if somebody came to you and knocked on your door and said, we've got a brilliant way to...
But not if a private company knocked on my door, no. So I'm just curious. Why? Oh, no, why would I? Sure, I would want to be sure I'd know where the money was going and all that. No money asking.
But we did, we're audited. You know, so everything, we have to, in our standards, we have to produce implementation reports annually. And that's every facet where every penny goes. Mm. And that's all public documented on the standard. So we're probably, in some cases, we're probably heavier ordered than your normal NGO.
Aina?
Yeah. What you're talking about is carbon trading. So what you have in Ireland, companies that produce carbon are allowed by license to emit so much. And if they emit more than that, they're fined. But they can buy their way out of it by buying carbon credits. But it's not emitted in the Amazon because they've bought the carbon credits so they can emit more in the country where their factory is. So what you're doing is just shifting the, at least it seems to me this, you're shifting where the carbon is being emitted, not in the Amazon because of your work there, but the companies that are buying these things are not doing it out of philanthropy. They're doing it so they can emit more carbon in the country where their factory is.
I think you're looking at two different markets completely. You're looking at the mandatory market and the voluntary market. In the mandatory market, that is the case. A company is set with a guideline and it's set with a barrier that they have to reduce. And if they don't meet that, they can, in effect, buy their way out in the mandatory markets. We don't work in the mandatory markets. The market we work in is completely voluntary. It's up to people and individuals if they think, look, we think it's a good idea to reduce our emissions. You know, there's no magic bullet at the minute. We all use fossil fuel. The lights are going here. Everything's going here as normal. You know, it's a purely a personal choice or a choice for a company to say, look, do I take responsibility or don't I? If I do, there is a system in place for me to do that.
Now, Kieran, Derek has a forest out in Brazil.
Yeah.
And he's thinking of cutting it down. Right.
Yep.
But you decide to come along and tell Derek, look, Derek, if you don't cut down the forest, I'll give you money. Is that right?
Absolutely.
Now, in other words, you prevent the forest from being cut down because you've paid off Derek for not cutting it down.
Well, that's a good thing.
And then you claim carbon credits for having saved a wood. This is what you do. And then you sell these carbon credits on to other companies who are polluting the environment to help them cope with their fines. Is this what the, is this the mechanism?
It is a mechanism, but we don't sell them into mandatory markets where a company can reduce it. What we ask for is for people to support it, no more than, you know, an NGO that was trying to protect the forest and went out and said, please support us. We've got a financial mechanism that allows that job to be done, but it's no different than what you said. You know, either Derek's very, very wealthy and he can afford to buy the forest and say, that's it, I'm going to leave it standing, I don't need any help from anybody, or he becomes a charity, or he must go through a very long, difficult 3-year process to prove the issue of whatever market he's under, and then go and give people the opportunity to offset. And that's what we do.
So Derek gets money for doing nothing. He threatens to cut down the forest.
You come along and say, that's a typical impression that people have. And it's absolutely wrong.
But you do pay him.
He doesn't get money. Of course we pay him. Why wouldn't we pay him? You pay him if he cuts it down by buying the timber from him.
You've given him the money.
You've just bought the wood off him by asking him to cut it down. Who does that benefit?
You've given him the money. Now you have carbon credits.
Yeah.
Now,
or I have timber.
In order to
pay
for that, in order to pay for the money you're giving Derek, you have to sell these carbon credits.
Exactly.
Isn't that right?
Exactly.
And you have to make a profit on these carbon credits.
Exactly.
Because otherwise the business won't survive.
Great stuff.
So you're flogging the carbon credits.
Yep.
At a higher price than...
What's wrong with that, Richard?
Let's look at this another way. The other option is Derek cuts it down and I end up with a lovely wooden floor that he gets paid for. Everybody makes money every step of the way, including the timber dealers, the importers, the cabinet makers. Everybody ends up...
Yeah, but you have flogged off these credits to somebody who's polluting to a far greater extent.
You don't know that. You don't know that. It's in the voluntary market.
You're getting more money for the credits than you're paying Derek, so there must be some kind of a payoff here. Otherwise, the books don't balance.
Well, that is the actual... That is the idea of it, and that's what you struggle and you work hard with on these projects. That's what you actually... You have to balance the books the same as anybody has to balance the books.
But can I ask you, Richard?
You go up with your money then and get another forest and sell it again and never put down anything.
Okay, what's wrong with that? I'm only asking you now out loud. So Kieran's company is coming to me as a farmer and that I have on my land, I have forestry. I'm in the Amazon basin. Yeah. I don't want to cut it down, but I need money, so I'm going to cut it down. I'm going to sell it to somebody who turns it into lovely furniture or whatever, or wood chippings, whatever the case may be. Kieran comes along, he's the other possibility, and he offers me a certain amount of money not to cut it down. I'm happy with the price. I'm not going to cut it down. Happy days. Does it mean, by the way, that I can never cut it down, Kieran?
Never cut it down.
Ever. I can't just wait until next year.
It's annual. I mean, our contracts are for a minimum of 20 years. The idea of that is that we're audited every year on the emissions that we miss, because it's very important to understand that. We're only granted credits on the what we can prove, we can absolutely prove is an avoided emission. It's nothing to do with the size of your forest or how many tons of carbon is in it. It's based solely on what we can prove would have been the case. So if you took it as another example and you turned around and said, look, Kieran, I've got the rights to cut down 20% of my forest every year for the next 20 years. But I'll go into contract with you that I don't. So you'll pay me funding or finance for eco services. And that's actually the reality of it. You can't really take
And you
it
give
as
them the piece of
first.
Paper to say, well, this is what I've done.
this is what he's done. He signs up to the contract. Okay, now, remember, we're monitored.
Oh, yeah, no, I accept that, by the way. I accept that. That's not the issue. Don't worry, I accept that. So now, Richard, your issue is that the companies here are buying credits and doing what they want. And what's the problem?
You have saved, we've saved your particular forest, but now we're going to pay off somebody else who's doing equal damage, if not more. And I argue it must be more damage because you've got to make a profit on these carbon credits.
No, so you've got to make a profit on the timber.
Exactly. Somebody else somewhere.
Is
going
to benefit.
So, in other words, there's going to be carbon emissions elsewhere in the world.
But there is
from the
fellow
to whom you sold the credits you got there. So, all that's happened is that pollution in the Amazon is transferred to pollution somewhere else, and you've made a few bob out of it.
Yeah, but unless governments come in and kick ass, and say, well, okay, you can't buy carbon credits. That's it. You must reduce your emissions.
Well, how are they going to do it?
What I'm saying is, I'm not saying how they're going to do it. I'm saying unless a governments come in and say, stop emitting, that's it. You can't buy carbon credits. This business is going to go on, no?
That's what we have with regulation. Well, I mean, that's what we were saying about carbon trading. Yeah. And the companies here have a certain amount of carbon that they're allowed to emit. And then the rest of it then, either they compensate, they buy it, or they cut back.
Gets up in the morning and says, I can't wait to pollute today. I just can't wait to emit some carbon. You know, we create the demand. We all want the fossil fuel. We all want the electricity when we switch on. We all want to be able to switch on our energy. At the minute, there's no benefit to that. At least through this carbon trading, there can be a benefit. Somebody benefits through the system.
Yeah,
because without
the
it, there is no
put,
benefit.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But surely the money should be invested in means of generating energy that doesn't require burning fossil fuels
but
in the first place.
Yeah,
oil and all that stuff is still too cheap.
But people
because
don't
it's cheaper
understand.
To buy oil than it is to develop other
technologies.
Most renewable
energy development came from carbon trading. The funding to create it came from carbon trading. Governments didn't give it to them. It actually came through carbon projects where the money was put into renewable energy research and development. And this is where people have got to look a little bit deeper into just the surface, you know, skin of it. Oh, great, pollute here and you can, you know, do what you like.
Pay here and you can pollute there.
It's not really.
Richard, you don't look happy. I'm very concerned about you. I think we're going to have to give you mouth to mouth resuscitation.
I'm not having chest pains.
Well, goody. Best offer I've had all day.
I don't like conflict, Derek, as you know, and I never enter conflict on the airwaves. So,
what's your issue exactly? What's the problem? What's
my
the problem
issue is, I think that it is a kind of a hiding exercise whereby pollution is limited in one part of the world at the expense of it occurring somewhere else, and that is no benefit ultimately to our carbon situation.
But would you blame Kieran and his company for getting into that business?
Not in the blame game. I'm just clarifying what's going on. That's what I'm anxious to do, to describe rather than to condemn or criticise what's going on.
Can I get back to the loggerhead turtle? Where does he fit into this whole thing?
With the loggerhead turtle at the moment, we're between Rita and the Irish Whale and Dolphin Group, Simon Barrow, as I understand it, and Roan Byrne, who's our own man, in inverted commas, I say, because Roan is a regular contributor and an expert in turtles. They're having a look at where the best place in the world to send Leona is. Yeah. And once they can figure that out, because they're not quite sure where Leona came from, all right? Did it come from North America? Did it come from Europe? Where did it come from? Where do you put it back? When do you put it back? What licenses do you need? Because you can't just start moving endangered species around the world willy-nilly. You need certain licenses. You need a CITES license to send it over to North America. And if you're in Europe, you may not need that one. Then who's going to look after it when you take it to the first place, the first port of call, to make sure that it's quarantined and everything else before releasing it back to sea? Now, so there's a lot of research and investigation going on as we speak. And once that is complete and everybody's confident and happy that this is the best option for this turtle, then we will undertake to actually repatriate it. Aina, you have your
love
in
there. I was just saying, yeah, where did it come from? It was found in the County Clare, washed up. Why can't they make it well and healthy, stick a thing on it and put it back into the sea in County Clare and let it go? I mean, these things normally would come up. This one was just poor and undernourished and it was looking like it was. But other turtles come up and they go back again. Can we not just sort of say, there you are, now you're lovely and healthy, off you go, wearing our expensive microphone or my tag that you've given it and see where it goes. Otherwise, you're just putting it on an airplane and bringing it to where you think it might live.
I think that's a mistake. It's a loggerhead. It's not a leatherback. Leatherbacks come here of their own accord. It is normal for them to do so, but they generate their own body heat. They are unique. But the loggerhead has got lost. It's out of its depth and out of its normal habitat. And the obligation is, if you feel there is an obligation, to return it to that habitat. Mm. Now, I would have thought a DNA check on each side.
Yeah, well, I've suggested that. So, as I said, where we are at the moment is they're doing all of the checks. They're doing the investigations and doing the research that is outside of our hands. The experts are in control of the animal, as it should be.
Yes, of course. I'm just saying, if it obviously gets entitled, we're going to have to like a seal or something like that.
So once that's all complete and the decision is made, then Kieran's company have offered to sponsor a tag. An electronic tag, so that it can be monitored and see where it goes and all that kind of stuff. And we'll see where that stands in some weeks from now. But at the moment, apparently, the turtle is thriving in Galway in the aquarium down there. And it has never been better. So, and
I'm sure
they will be very sorry. And it is attracting huge crowds of people going in. But I remember, with Don is gone now, but myself and Don Conroy and a gentleman by the name of Gabriel King took back the Kemp's Ridley turtle, which was washed up in Bannistrand in County Kerry back in the 90s. And Michael Connolly looked after it in the aquarium in Bray when he was there for a while. And then it appeared on the Late Late Show. And then Erlingus had given it a business class seat to New York. And then we took it to there and it stayed in the New York State Aquarium overnight. And then Fruit of the Loom gave their private jet. And we flew to Austin in Texas. And then we took it out to the University of Austin at Texas. And they rehabilitated it, quarantined it. And then it was put back into the Gulf of Mexico because these turtles breed on a stretch of beach there called Rancho Nuevo, which is a 17-kilometre stretch. So they had a very good idea where this had come from. Only 20 turtles in 25 years, Kemp's Ridleys had come in. So we'll see what happens. We'll watch this space. But in the meantime, Kieran, thank you very much indeed
You're welcome.
For coming in. Much appreciated.